played the same thing about Alabama too. I mean, football.
What about you, Brandon? Who you like?
Oh, me?
Oh, okay. You're Darren.
Yes, I am. I take the confusion as flattery, though. I'm
I need to recenter myself.
you're still going everywhere mentally. You're still
right. It's time for the Brew and Shavers Sports Podcast.
Hey there, sports fans. Welcome back. We're joining you from the beleaguered state of Louisiana, where our women's basketball team has been under attack by white male sports writers all over the country who evidently have something against the South and against the basketball teams. We're going to get into all of that, and we're going to dig deep into this before the show's over, Darren.
Absolutely.
Because some stuff needs to be addressed, and some folks need to be their comments need to be called out for what they are. But before we get there, and let me take a deep breath. I felt like I had to wear a tie and dress up because of all these caricatures that are being portrayed about the South. And my goodness, hopefully some folks will think better of us now.
Yeah, that's right. And I wore a Yankee cap. Does that help any here? Or does that make it worse?
I thought we were on the same page.
I was trying to help. It's
goodness. You don't have a Braves hat you could pull out.
I could have pulled out a Braves hat. I didn't think about that. It's at least a different league. I could have done that, I guess.
Well, let's get into our news and notes for today. The women's Final Four game featuring the Iowa Hawkeyes against the LSU Tigers set an all-time viewership record, 12.3 million viewers. That's the most ever for a women's college basketball game. If that were not enough, Darren, it's more than any Major League Baseball game last year, NHL, MLS, or NBA game, except for, I believe it was game 5 of the NBA Finals, and more than every college football game except one last year.
That's incredible.
If our research is correct, that is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Regardless, 12.3 million people to watch a women's game, an Elite Eight game, to determine who goes to the Final Four.
Yep. And you know, honestly, even with those numbers, you know, watching the game, knew it was a big game, knew it was a big deal. But the thing that kind of stood out to me was in conversation yesterday leading up to the game, and then today after the game, the people that I ended up in conversation about the game that never ever thought I'd have a conversation about a ball game at all, much less honestly a women's basketball game, really surprised me. I thought it was awesome, the amount of conversation that I've had over the past 48 hours about this one specific game. Really awesome. And we've been talking about this for the past couple of years, that continued kind of elevated position we've seen the women's game continue to take, and it was really evident in this game.
A historic moment in sports history, period, regardless of men, women, just historic period.
Absolutely.
Of course, the Iowa Hawkeyes won that game, led by Caitlin Clark, 41 points, who had a dominant performance.
Yes.
And that completed, or that was the first game. And then the second game, UConn and USC completed the women's Final Four, which will be played this Friday night. And in the women's Final Four, we have UConn, Iowa, NC State, and of course, undefeated South Carolina. Going to be two terrific games, I hope, on Friday night.
Absolutely. Very exciting. You would think, just looking at those four teams, that's going to be two exciting and fun games to watch.
Definitely. Definitely. And we'll, later in the show, we'll make our picks on who we think is going to play in the national championship game and who's going to take home the title. On the men's side of things, the Final Four is set. UConn, NC State. This is the first time, I believe, in history where two universities have had men and women's team in the Final Four in the same year.
how crazy are those campuses right now? You know, that's got to be insane on both of those campuses. That's very, very cool.
Completing the Final Four for the men is Alabama, first time ever. And of course, Purdue, a number one seed. So again, those games will be played on Saturday night, yep, with the championship game played on Monday. It looks like men and women's, we're going to have some terrific basketball this weekend.
Absolutely. It's going to be a fun, fun weekend of basketball.
Speaking of basketball, some news out of Fayetteville, Arkansas, where head coach, Arkansas men's basketball head coach, Eric Musselman, a story broke today that he is interviewing for the USC men's open coaching position tomorrow. We don't have a lot of information on this, Darren, but what are you hearing? What are your thoughts?
Well, it has been confirmed from both sides, both Arkansas outlets and USC outlets, as well as On3, some of the independent outlets are confirming it. So it's not just a speculative thing. It is, according to this source, according to that source, but it's being confirmed kind of from all sides. So we can say that it's not just a story that's out there. But as far as thoughts, my first thought is, don't get it. You know, with the success that he's had in Arkansas, yes, it's been a down year. I do understand that. It's a down year that nobody, including him or the team, saw coming, obviously, because they were very much being seen as a team that was considered to be one of the top teams in the league coming into the year. But even with all of that being said, this seems it doesn't make sense if it's a reaction to the year or if it's a reaction to how the fans treated the year. It's a gross overreaction. That's the only way I think you could describe it. I mean, because there's nothing that says based off this one year that all of a sudden he can't win in the SEC. I can't see it being an NIL thing because, goodness gracious, I don't know what the NIL is in Arkansas, but I can't imagine the NIL basketball situation at USC being better than the NIL basketball situation in Arkansas. So there is nothing about this that makes sense to me. I don't get it. If it does happen and he ends up at USC, there's got to be something. I mean, we're SEC homers. We own that. We're honest about that from the flags behind us and most of the times from the hats we wear. We're honest about that. You know, I said this before we started recording. Does he think he can win? You know, have an easier path year in and year out in the Big Ten? That's, to me, that's the only thing I can possibly think of. He won't have a down year like this in the Big Ten. But I don't – there's just – what are your thoughts? There's just nothing about this that makes sense to me.
Two words that Eric Musselman needs to consider: Lincoln Riley.
Absolutely.
Leaving Oklahoma to USC did not go as he had planned. Yes, the lights in LA may be brighter in what I tend to refer to as the lower LA. We live in the real LA.
Right.
But some people get caught up in the celebrity culture and the bright lights. And is what's happening to Musselman, or is there something going on in Arkansas that we're not privy to? Because Arkansas has traditionally been a basketball power, and they have a strong fan base, strong support.
Yep.
He's getting players there. So I'm not sure what's driving this.
It could be a way to get a pay raise in a down year. I mean, I guess that could be it. You go for an interview at a place like USC where they know that they can throw money at you, and your school knows that they can throw money. Maybe you end up with an extension or a little bit of a bump, maybe some bonus rewritten in the contract. I guess that could be another option, but you're right. There's got to be something behind the scenes that we don't know about, or because there's nothing else about it that makes sense.
We'll keep tabs on it to see what comes of this interview, if Musselman indeed is going to leave Arkansas.
Yep.
We've got some more basketball news, but before we get to that, I want to switch over real quick, Darren, and look at the AP Top 25 baseball poll and look at our SEC teams, because there's been quite a shakeup here.
Yes, there has.
Arkansas holding on that number one spot, and they completed a three-game sweep against LSU.
Yep.
Very impressive.
Their pitching, their bats, their fielding percentages, you name it, they are doing it right this year. They are impressive.
Coming in at number three, the Aggies of A&M, 4 Tennessee, 6 Florida, 7 Vanderbilt, 13 Alabama, 17 Kentucky. LSU drops all the way to 18. South Carolina 22 and Mississippi State 23. Those are your SEC teams that are currently in the men's top 25 baseball poll.
And let me say one thing about the LSU dropping to 18. I don't get that. I mean, I'm a Vanderbilt fan, so this is not spoken as an LSU fan. But, yes, they were swept, and that's not good. Their bats didn't look good, but I think that has something to do with – you were playing the number one team in the nation and the number one team with authority in the nation. To me, sometimes the polls kind of overreact. When you're in that mid range and you step up and play the number one, the number two, the number three, like that top four team, and you get lose two out of three games or you get swept, to drop a team 6, 8, 10 spots seems weird to me, because it's, did you expect them to win two out of three games? Did you? I don't understand that. If you're at 8 and you drop to 10 or 11 because you expected them to be closer games, okay, I get that. But that drastic of a drop because you got swept by the number one team in the country, it seems a little weird to me. But just wanted to throw that out there. I think that's a bit of an overreaction. Just my 2 cents worth.
No, pollsters never overreact to anything.
No, it's never happened once.
Let's segue back to women's college basketball. We're joined now by Brandon Lack, who's been a part of our show throughout the tournament, men and women's side. So thank you for coming back for another episode, Brandon.
Thanks, Jeff.
But over in Knoxville, we have news coming out of Tennessee firing women's head coach Kelly Harper after 5 seasons at the helm. A 108-52 record, pretty respectable record, but no SEC titles, no NCAA titles. Also, very multi-layered hiring and firing. Kelly Harper was a point guard for Tennessee from 95 to 98. 3 titles as a player, including the 1997 Final Four MVP. So I want to start with you, Brandon, since you are a Tennessee fan. Your thoughts, first of all, about the firing of Kelly Harper, and second, who should Tennessee go after?
Well, like you said, Coach Harper did have a good record overall, but there's just such a high standard at the University of Tennessee women's basketball specifically, that, you know, you go 5 years without a SEC championship or even past, goodness, I think maybe just the second round of the tournament. I'm not sure how far the farthest they got, but it's been very disappointing end of the season wise for them. You know, she's a Pat Summitt disciple, I guess. Mm-hmm. She played for Pat Summitt is a Tennessee alumni. You know, she's through and through. She bleeds orange. She played for Holly Warwick, who also coached her. She took over for Holly when it was time for her to, you know, change the scenery from her.
We go from Pat Summitt to Holly Warwick to Kelly. And, you know, it's hard to fill the shoes of Pat Summitt. I mean,
absolutely. No one
can. But I think we continue the pattern of Tennessee former players, and we go after Kara Lawson, who's the head coach at Duke right now.
Interesting.
Is a player, a great player, great Tennessee player, great WNBA player, all-star player. She has NBA experience, which is unique. She was an assistant coach with the Celtics, I believe, and was a shooting coach that worked very closely with Marcus Smart. I read earlier today, and he's one of the greatest defensive guards in the entire league. And she helped him kind of hone his skills. So that's exactly what Tennessee needs. They got to toughen up defensively. And I think if you want to continue the pattern of former players, then why not go after her? It makes perfect sense. If Tennessee wants to kind of go outside of the program, it's Coach Gottlieb from USC. I think she would be a great fit too. You might have to back the Brinks truck up for her, but pay a little bit more than what they're willing. But she is also a great coach, great defensive coach with NBA experience too. I think she was with the wasn't actually too long ago with the Cavaliers. That's who it was. So I mean, those are two people that I think they should pursue heavily. Outside of that, you've got Vanderbilt's head coach would not be a terrible choice.
You watch your mouth.
I know, right?
That's a no.
Go after in-state coach. I can't recall her name though.
I told you I had your back. I'll forget a name. Shea Ralph. There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
Took me a minute.
That wouldn't be a bad choice either.
She's from a winning program. You know, coming from UConn. I mean, she knows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Winning program.
So, that's exactly what I was thinking. She came from UConn. Yep. If you don't, it ends up where you can't get someone from Tennessee, why not go after someone from a program like UConn for sure that has ties to that? So, my number one choice would be Kara Lawson for sure. I think that makes perfect sense. I'm sure she would love to come back to Knoxville and be the head coach. Fingers crossed it's Kara Lawson for me.
Do you think she can emerge from the shadow of Pat Summitt?
No, I mean, that's tough. I think people have a high opinion on her because that she played for Tennessee and was a great player and learned from Coach Summitt. I'm not sure if that's like too much pressure, because it's been a lot of pressure for Holly and Kelly. But I think someone like Kara Lawson could potentially break out of that and make her own mark.
And she's established herself as well at a program like Duke. So that could, exactly. That could help. That could help some.
And they started out rough with her. I think her first year was like 2019. They didn't have a great season. Then the next season, COVID hit. But the last two seasons, they've done well. Especially this past season, they made the Sweet 16. She has continuously improved. She's gotten better and better and better and better in her short time at Duke. And so I think she's on a path that is going to make her an elite coach one day. And why not do it at Tennessee? I just think it makes perfect sense for her to come back to Knoxville. She might not want to, but because of the whole Pat Summitt thing, I think it just makes too much sense.
And I think it makes sense to be hearing you kind of describe it. She's a coach that has established herself as a candidate regardless of her history at Tennessee. And that's an enormous bonus. If you, that history at Tennessee becomes a bonus, to me, that probably gives her a better shot than either of the previous two coaches mm-hmm. there. And I think if you, if you've got a tie to Pat Summitt and you get the call to come back to Tennessee, I don't see anybody saying no. I'd be shocked if they want her. I think she comes back. I'd be genuinely stunned if they call and say, "Hey, want to come back?" I assume she does. I would be genuinely surprised.
Yeah, I would be so happy. I mean, and the entire Tennessee fan base would be. They just remember. I remember watching her on TV when I was young, watching her play for Pat, and I mean, in on those really, really good teams they had, and I just think it would be just so nostalgic. It would be great. It'd be great.
Tennessee still remains one of the premier coaching jobs in women's Absolutely. Basketball, and if for Tennessee. Sure. If Tennessee is good, it makes women's college basketball better. So
absolutely.
So we're hoping that comes about. They find the right person, and Tennessee starts trending in an even better direction. Kelly Harper did a great job, but no Tennessee fans. There's a high standard set by Coach Summitt. And Brandon, I remember the days in the early 80s. You remember Tennessee and Louisiana Tech playing for national
titles. Absolutely.
So, and I think there was a point guard for Louisiana Tech named Kim Mulkey. Right. During that time. Exactly. Yeah.
I wonder if they, I haven't looked it up or anything, but I know that Tennessee's first national championship was in 87. I know that. Was Mulkey playing then, or she?
No, Tech, it was before that. Tech won in 82. Yeah.
82. I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They probably had some clashes though, for sure.
Oh yeah.
Because Tennessee was
definitely
good before then. They just hadn't won a national championship yet.
Right. Well, we will keep tabs on that. And as that search continues, let's go ahead and pause right now for this week in sports history.
Jimmy Valvano, affectionately known as Jimmy V, etched his name into college basketball lore in an improbable triumph. As the head coach of the North Carolina State Wolfpack, Valvano orchestrated a remarkable journey during the 1983 NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament. Facing formidable odds, the Wolfpack embarked on a thrilling path to the championship. Valvano's team, fueled by resilience and determination, won 9 consecutive games in the ACC tournament and NCAA tournament. 6 of these victories were secured by a mere margin of 3 points or less. The pinnacle moment arrived in the national title game against the heavily favored Houston Cougars. With seconds remaining, the score stood at 52-52. Then in a heart-stopping finale, Lorenzo Charles soared for a buzzer-beating dunk, sealing a 54-52 victory for the Wolfpack. The exuberant celebration that followed, with Valvano racing across the court in sheer joy, remains etched in basketball history. Jimmy V's legacy transcends the hardwood. In that magical season of 1983, Valvano and his Wolfpack etched their names in a tournament, proving that dreams can indeed come true on the grandest stage of college basketball.
Oh, thank you.
Despite the loss last night to Iowa in the Elite Eight, the LSU women have been going through a storm for quite some time that's been heightened in the last week and a half, 2 weeks or so, due to some national media articles, opinion pieces about the, not just head coach Kim Mulkey, but about the players themselves. It started with an article from the Washington Post by Kent Babb, in which he decided to try to delve into some of the personal family issues of Mulkey's life, issues that she already had detailed in a 2007 book, which raised some questions. Why the fascination with Mulkey, and why aren't you doing this with any of the men's coaches? And then the LA Times had an article by Ben, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, Balk, in which he really crossed a line, referring to the women on the LSU basketball team as dirty debutantes, as comparing this game as one of good versus evil, calling UCLA women America's sweethearts. Now, since that article has come out, he has apologized recently for his choice of words. The LA Times did go back and take out the line dirty debutantes, in which a lot of us weren't sure what he meant by that. But remember, in the press conference, when Mulkey addressed it, she said, Google it. Well, I did. And that was an eye opener. Way, way below the belt. But it's continuing. In fact, people like Doug Gottlieb, I hadn't heard from him in years. I guess he's with Fox Sports, defending the LA Times writer for his piece. And saying no one likes LSU women because, and here's the four reasons he gave, and I want to address each one. Number one, you buy another player to join your team. He's referring to Haley Van Lith. Yeah, welcome to NIL, Doug. It's happening everywhere. Mm-hmm. Every team is doing this. Why single out LSU? Why be so selective in your indignation? Secondly, he says, the LSU players run their mouths constantly. Again, selective indignation.
Yep.
You not see anyone else doing this?
Competitive college athletes. I mean,
exactly.
They all talk trash. Everyone.
Exactly.
Of them.
Exactly.
Like, come on.
Yep.
Number three, your coach is despised. Not in Louisiana.
Yeah. Right. I mean.
Yeah.
That's a matter of geography.
She is a polarizing figure that she's kind of a love or hate type personality, but I think it's more of a love than hate.
And when she was at Baylor, not in Texas, they sure were loving her when she was winning there. There weren't anybody saying we can't stand Kim Mulkey, right?
if Gottlieb wasn't, and this is an opinion piece, he's entitled to his opinions.
Right.
But it became very clear his feelings for Mulkey. I mean, when you make a statement like that, a strong statement about another human being. And then number four, he said, anytime somebody's critical of you, talking about the LSU players, you go to the sexism/racism card. Well, Doug, I need to say something about this. I looked up misogyny in the dictionary, and I'm from Louisiana, so you probably see me as a little below your level. But I did look it up in the dictionary, and it says hatred of, aversion to, or prejudice against women. Now, when you do that to a black woman, it becomes racism. When you look at some of the stuff that's been written after last year, the national championship game, and the names that Angel Reese was called and the things that were written about her, how can you not say they were not sexist? They were not racist. Sexism is fostering stereotypes about women. And why is it that we have, in the last week and a half, three national media members who are white men who are overly criticizing LSU? Now, no, they're not the only ones doing it. I mean, I read some stuff. Emmanuel, how do you say his last name? Is it Acho?
I think so. I think that's right.
Was critical of Angel Reese. That's his opinion. But it seems like people are using a standard toward LSU that is constantly moving, and it's depending on a person's prejudices, because I don't see that same standard being used. I think with Gottlieb, with the LA Times writer, we're talking selective indignation. You don't like a region. You don't like a particular university. You don't like a particular coach. You don't like a way a team plays. You don't like the personalities on that team. And so that's that's what's wrong in all of this. And I was so grateful when Holly Rowe tweeted something to Angel Reese positive. We need more women sports writers to stand up and stop this, because it's not just the racism, it's the sexism. We still have a sport and a media profession that's dominated by men. And and we're seeing things like this that show us that there's still a lot of work to be done when it comes to these issues. So I'm going to stop right there, guys, because I'm starting to get a little worked up. My ears are turning red. So what do you guys think about all this?
I want to step in and just say one thing very, very quickly. And then Brandon, definitely want to get your feedback and thoughts as well. But, you know, the sexism part of it, the thing that keeps jumping into my mind is, take everything that Angel Reese has done, everything she said that has gotten a backlash, things that she's done on the court that's gotten a backlash, take her out of it and sit LeBron James in it. Would male, the very names you just mentioned, would their reactions be the same? Would they be writing the same words?
No, not at all.
I don't think they would be.
From the
sexism side of it, I think that's pretty blatantly obvious. I don't know how you get around that. I think if you just make that one change, I think it's very, very, very obvious to me that the reaction that, and it's not just Angel Reese, like you said, with this women's team specific in particular, it is amazing to me the reactions that they are getting about things. None of these things that are being done and are being said are a first on a basketball court. We have seen them all be done and said before, but it's the first time we've seen 18 to 22 year old women doing them. I don't think that's a coincidence that now we're seeing this kind of backlash. Just from the sexism piece of it, to me, that makes it so glaringly obvious when you just kind of play that kind of mental reaction game in your own head. Remove these women on the court from it. Put Steph Curry, LeBron James, put them in it. Are these pieces being written? Are these things being said? Is there somebody saying, well, he brought it on himself? Absolutely not. It's not being said. I don't think anyone can dispute that. Truthfully, if you're being honest, I don't think you can dispute that.
I think what's happening is last year really started some momentum in the popularity of women's college basketball. And again, it was Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. And that's carried over into this year. I think what's happening is, these men that are clearly sexist and probably a little racially motivated too behind it, are seeing, they're like, oh my goodness, women's basketball is popular. And it's, I maybe don't know how to feel about that. And then they start paying attention to it more. They see LSU, a very, very popular team that a lot of people watch. They see a team that is probably 90% black, and so they're easy targets basically for these writers to write hate pieces on. You have a head coach that is loud and yelling and on the court and is very animated and isn't afraid to speak up to media. And you have players that are not afraid to speak up to media, that are not afraid to call them out. And I'm not sure the media knows how to react to them. Maybe the media doesn't like LSU because of that. I don't know, but calling them names like dirty debutantes and stuff, I mean, it's ridiculous. And good versus evil. I mean, are you kidding me? It's like was that referring to like Iowa versus LSU as good versus evil?
No, that was UCLA.
UCLA versus LSU.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, you know, and but the Iowa versus LSU kind of gives me the old like Catholics versus convicts.
yeah, you know, and
guess who the convicts were? It was a team full of like loud black men in Miami versus the Catholics. but it's clearly sexist. And I think there's no room for that at all. Whoever approved that these articles get published or whatever, I'm not saying they should be fired or whatever, but I mean, come on. There's steps that these articles go through before they get published, and someone should have spoken up against it, because I mean, it's clear and obvious that there was something wrong with that. Now, I don't know. Haley Van Lith had a good quote. She said that it's racist, basically. She said that they're being racist against their teammates. And then I saw something about, I don't know if you guys saw, it was about Kim Mulkey that said that she discriminated against gay players on her team, and also like made fun of their weight and things like that. If players were overweight or out of shape, she would belittle them and stuff. No coach that is that successful is going to run a program like that. That's just impossible. Exactly. You can't be like that and win national championships and be successful and coach for, gosh, like 30 something years, however long she's been. Like you can't be like that. It's I don't believe that for a second. And I would find it impossible. I think it'd be impossible to find a former player that would back that up, because it's just simply not true. They're just trying to dig up stuff because, again, they're sexist. And they see a successful woman, like I said, that is very outspoken, and she's not nice. I mean, she's not nice. She will call people out, and she and the media traditionally doesn't handle people like her very well. So
yeah,
there you go. You start trying to dig stuff up, start rumors, to get her name out there in a negative light, so that people maybe not won't support her, so that people will turn against her, people will turn against LSU, and then everybody's focusing on Angel Reese and Flauge like being outspoken and, you know, flamboyant and visibly cursing on the screen and stuff like that. But that, like, it, a lot. Not 75% of college athletes do that. If I recall, I'm also a West Virginia fan. I recall a close up of Caitlin Clark getting a layup and torching somebody on West Virginia, and then screaming the F word. But you know, no one mentioned that. But you know, whatever. I could talk about this all night. But I mean, it's just a double standard. It's hard to see. I just wish people could just focus on basketball, because that's what it's all about.
I agree completely. Absolutely. We've seen forms of this narrative before with the Catholics versus convicts. We've seen this narrative, and to see it recycled in this form, it's just lazy on the part of journalists. This is not something in 2024 that we should be recycling. It's not healthy on any level. We want to judge the players in the women's game. We want to judge what are they doing on the court. We want to judge them by their performance on the court. And instead, we're back to these old, tired, stereotypes that shouldn't be here. But I got one last thing to say to these guys from the Washington Post, LA Times, and people like Gottlieb who make such outrageous statements. And that's simply this: to quote the immortal Ronnie Van Zant, a Southern man don't need him around anymore. Anyway, anyhow,
I
got tongue twisted. Too much emotion in the moment.
Right.
That's right.
All right.
Everybody take a breath.
Y'all ready to make some picks of the Final Four?
Yeah.
So let's start with the women's, because
I like it.
They're playing some ball. And the women's side, we already mentioned UConn, Iowa, NC State, South Carolina. Darren, who do you like in the national championship game? I do need to clarify something. I wasn't sure. Okay. I said this in the previous segment that Emmanuel Acho, he is an African-American sports commentator. He played football at the University of Texas, played a few years in the NFL. I just want to clarify that, because we were talking about white sports writers. He's African-American. So.
Right. I think he's just sexist then.
Well, and you know what? Something I didn't say, but since you brought it back up, I'll very, very quickly say, I also think when you have a personality like Kim Mulkey that says, you know what? I don't care what the rules are. You're not going to start this junk. I'm going to stand my ground and I'm going to call you out. The press kind of circling the wagons, the typical like press joins together. So, you know, all of those, African-American, male, female, Caucasian, well, they all just kind of, because we're going to take her down. She can't do this to us. And so they all start taking shots together because they circle the wagons as the press. And I think that's another part of what we're seeing going on.
All right.
So,
Final Four. Are we really ready to move on?
All right. So, who do I see going to the national championship game? That's the million-dollar question. I think it is going to be, and I hope I'm saying this right, because we've got UConn, Iowa, South Carolina, NC State. Is that correct? I think we have South Carolina, Iowa in the national championship game.
Brandon?
I'm going to go with South Carolina, UConn.
I think I'm going to join Brandon. I'm going with South Carolina, UConn. Gino, I saw his press conference. Was it today? He's up to his own old shenanigans. He's in the groove. So look out.
He is. Paige Beckers is playing lights out. I think the Iowa UConn game is going to be a classic.
Absolutely.
But I think UConn just overall is just too much to handle for Iowa. Iowa's got a good supporting cast around Caitlin Clark, but UConn, I think, just if you take spot for spot, starting at the point guard all the way to the post, I think besides Caitlin Clark, I think UConn's just better at every other position. So, it just depends on if – basically it comes down to if Caitlin Clark channels, you know, Kobe or Michael Jordan and scores 50 points, which is very well possible. I think unless she has an all-time great game, then UConn's just a little too much for them. So,
how about the national champion? Who do you like, Brandon? Who's going to be our national champion on the women's side?
Just South Carolina again. I mean, boring.
Year after year. You know. I apologize for him, Coach Staley. I apologize. Yeah. That sounded kind of sexist.
Oh, did it? Right. Sorry.
Come on. Same thing about Alabama, too. I mean,
football. What about you, Brandon? Who do you like?
Oh, me?
Okay. You're Darren.
Yes, I am. I take the confusion as flattery, though. I'm
I need to recenter myself.
you're still going everywhere mentally. You're still right. I tell you, one of the reasons why I am looking forward to is South Carolina, Iowa, both of those winning and being the national championship is honestly, I'm looking forward to 2 years in a row. This really honestly doesn't even have anything to do with Caitlin Clark per se, but 2 years in a row, all of the conversation being about Iowa, just to see an SEC team win the championship. So I think that's what's going to happen again. Cool. I think South Carolina is going to win over Iowa and be the national champion. What about you, man?
I'm going with South Carolina. They have a chip on their shoulder when it comes to Iowa from last year because it was Iowa that knocked them out of the tournament.
Exactly.
Last year.
Exactly.
So let's go over to the men's side of things where the Final Four is set. We have UConn, NC State, Alabama, and Purdue. Brandon, who's going to the national championship game?
Purdue is going to beat, I think Purdue is going to beat North Carolina State. You know, I have found my new Christian Laettner or J.J. Redick type player. I hate Zach Edey. I'm sorry. I'm sure you're a nice guy, Zach.
You can't hate somebody. You can hate the way they play. Come on.
I can't stand him.
The way he plays. Come on, man. Come on.
Golly. I can't. Oh, yeah. I hate the way he plays.
So. There you go.
Thank you.
I dislike his persona on the floor immensely. There you go. That's it.
Like, I mean, there's, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen that 30 for 30. I hate Christian Laettner.
That's a great one, Bo.
But I mean, he is the new Christian Laettner, or like completely. I said, JJ Redick, or, you know, just one of those, or Grayson Allen, all these Duke guys, but man,
that's funny that it's all Duke guys, but yeah,
right, I know, but I don't like him on the court. Nope. But I hate to say it, but he's a dominant force. And I think he was too much for Tennessee. And I think he'll definitely be too much for North Carolina State as good as they're playing right now. But I mean, I look to him to score another 40 points and have 15 plus rebounds. And he's basically unstoppable. DJ Burns is a great player. I think he'll match up well against him physically, but he's just Zach Edey is just so tall and big and has good skills. He's a skilled player and he's efficient and has good footwork. You name it. I mean, he's a force. And he'll be too much for North Carolina State. Other side, it's UConn and I'm drawing a blank now. UConn and
Alabama.
UConn. Like I no way. I'm not cheering for Alabama.
Tennessee fan forgets Alabama's in the Final Four. Yeah, I don't exactly. buy it.
Yeah. UConn's got it. For the same reasons. Kind of like the UConn and Iowa matchup on the women's side. I think UConn just position for position is just better. They are a great, great team and they're suffocating. They get a 5-7 point lead and they just sit on it and they don't allow, and then it just continues. They're suffocating. They're dominant. And I think that they'll actually win the national championship. I think they're the one team that'll figure out Zach Edey, and I think UConn will win it all.
Well, UConn's got their own big man to match up with Edey.
Exactly. Yeah. Donovan Klingon is a monster. I think he's like 7'2". So I mean, he's got great height. He's not quite as strong as Edey is. I mean, Edey's 300 pounds. But he's got more finesse than Edey. He's going to stretch it. He's going to keep Edey out of the paint defensively, because Klingon's got an actual jumper that Edey doesn't have. So I think that'll be the kryptonite right there. And you're going to win.
Who do you like, Darren?
All right. Well, first of all, I was just shaking my phone here. Breaking news. Edie just signed an NIL deal with Camping World, because he just sets up camp in the key right in front of the basket, and nobody ever calls a 3 second.
I have one of those giant five-person tents set up for him, so he can just...
You kept saying he's a monster in the middle. Well, yeah, he just goes and stands there, and they never count. He was never – I think at one point he just stayed the entire second quarter. What's the old play, like Snowbird, when one guy just stays down at the other end? I think he just did that. I don't think he moved out from under the basket the second half of the first half, whatever I'm trying to say. Anyway, I agree with you. Not a fan. And I dislike how much they just let him sit there in the middle. And I think it was obvious. As a matter of fact, I shared with you guys before we started recording. It was so obvious. My father-in-law called me during the game and said, that whole 3 second violation thing, is that not a rule anymore? It's like, yeah, it is. They're just not calling it. And I think, what's the NC State guy's name? I'm blank.
DJ Burns.
Yeah. I think he can move him out. I think that's going to be the difference. And this is, I know that I've been predicting Purdue to go out since the second round, since the round of 32, but I guess I'll ride it till they prove me wrong. I think NC State beats them. On the other side of the coin, I've been predicting UConn to go out since, I think, the Sweet 16. And, 30-0 run. Whew, messed that one up. So I think I'm going to follow your lead on this one, Brandon, man. I think UConn wins that their Final Four game, and I think we're going to see back-to-back national championship for UConn. They are just dead gum. They are so good, and yeah, I just don't see from every angle how you can argue that they're not. They are so impressive, and as incredible of a story as it would be to see an 11 seed NC State win a national championship, I do think they can beat this Purdue team, but unfortunately, I think if they beat Purdue, I think UConn has the ability to make it a pretty boring national championship game, honestly. If they're playing NC State, I think NC State or UConn is a definitive, no matter who they play, I think UConn is the definitive national champion, no matter who wins the other side of the bracket. What about you, Ben?
I've got Connecticut, UConn over Purdue for the national title. I think Purdue has had the mismatches with Edie throughout this tournament. They won't have that against Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And how can you bet against Dan Hurley right now? My goodness. Wow. That guy has built something at UConn, and it is scary good.
And Zach Edey, when DJ Burns pushes you around for two halves during your Saturday, is it Saturday night when they play?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's why all those coaches that you felt so the need to call out at the end of your game, that's why, because you're going to be pushed around. Just wanted to throw that out there. Not that I dislike him when he's on the court or anything. Just saying.
Guy that's 7'4" and 300 pounds shouldn't get tossed around like he does.
Exactly. No matter who you are, if you have a team that has a guy that's 7'4", 300 pounds, you should not have a sentence that ends with, and last year you got beat by a 16 seed. Just saying. So just throwing that out there as well.
Ouch, ouch, ouch. Let's get an update on our bracket challenge, Darren. Who do we got leading the way?
All right, so our top five right now are you, sir, at number five, or number one, even though your national champion is at Houston, is
and are you talking about Brandon? You call
no,
Brandon?
No, me? You sir, are number one right now.
Well, I got an email this week from some other place that said my bracket was busted and I should give up even talking about sports.
Your bracket is busted, but you are still in number one.
What's that say about, oh my goodness.
However, that being said, our next three are the three that still have their national champion intact. So they have the ability to bump up and bump up quick. We have ESPN. I don't know where ESPiano came from, but ESPN fan 35765. I'll just say the first digits has UConn as their national champion. ESPN fan 349507, who also has UConn as their national champion. And then Trevor Perkins, who has Purdue as a national champion. And then number five is Zipster 38, who also had Houston as a national champion. So that'll go out of the way quick. And then we also had, just to name a few more in the top 10, PGC, Bossier, NELAC, Lenardi Spirit Animal Golf on the Hardwood, and Bigfoot Search Crew are still hanging out in the top 10, but all of them have national champions that are gone. The two ESPN fan and Trevor Perkins are the only ones that still have a national champion. So it's a fight to see who ends up at that national champion, and that's who will win the bracket challenge.
Oh, if it wasn't for Jamal Shedd's ankle.
Oh, you're telling me. are telling me.
My heart hurt when I saw that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
He's such a great player.
Yep.
Well, before we leave, a couple of things I want to say. First of all, Brandon, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah,
appreciate absolutely. You being on the show. Secondly, want to give a shout out to one of our listeners, Travis Bentley, who helped us out on why the Lexington Herald Leader Calipari with a K. And he told us it was all about Kentucky First. And I thought, brilliant. I didn't think about that, Darren.
Yep.
So Travis, thank you for posting that comment and helping us better understand that. Yep. And then the last thing I want to say, I know sometimes in sports commentary, we see the shows all the time. We listen to them. People get very insulting and tear others down and tear people apart. And we don't want to do that on the show. So please understand, when we're disagreeing with opinions, we're trying to focus on opinions. We're focused on a player's style or play, but not an individual's persona, who they actually are. And so
right. If
we've done that at some point in this show, we ask that you forgive us for that. That's not our intention at all. We don't ever want to make things personal. We do have opinions about players, coaches, sports writers, and others, fan bases, schools, all that. But we definitely
I don't hate you.
We don't want to attack who a person is, so to speak.
Right. And to your point, the exact thing that we do is we have a bunch of fun talking about sports. Even when we talk about not liking Zach Edey on the floor, or I made the point about the coaches that overlooked you, stuff like that. But Brandon, let me point in the right direction, enormous Tennessee fan, me, big Vanderbilt fan, but we laugh. That's all within sport. We laugh and cut up. It has nothing to do with us as people, as persons. We enjoy one another, get along. Has nothing to do with us as people. It's just the sport of it, where the back and forth and having the fun about as fans. And that's the difference. Right. And I think being the point you're trying to make.
And I still maintain that Dallas Turner's hit on Jaden Daniels was late. Mm-hmm.
And as a Vanderbilt fan, I'll chime in. Jeff Green traveled also.
Thanks again for watching. New episodes drop. This week dropping Wednesday morning.
Yep.
So look for us at your convenience on whatever podcast platform you listen to, or you can watch us on YouTube. Again, thank you for your support. Hit that like, subscribe button. Leave us a comment, what you liked, what you didn't like. And we'll be happy to address that. We appreciate you so much for your support. And until next week, y'all take care.
Have a great week.
Thank you for making the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast your go-to sports show. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show if you haven't already. Your feedback is so important. Let us know what you think about this week's show. Send an email to brewandshavers@gmail.com or a text to our text line 318-390-3599. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you again for listening to the Brew and Shaver Sports Podcast. See you next week.